Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What is your good? What is your bad? What is your ugly from the Houston Astros series defeat at the hands of the Texas Rangers? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Poncho says you guys are panicking. Last season they had the very same record, 2.5 games back. We're not panicking.
No, we're
talking.
No
one's panicking. We're discussing the Astros so far through 16 games and how they've looked.
Has the defense looked good? No. Has the hitting been great? No.
I still think that the Astros are going to win the division.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to win the division comfortably. But you can talk about and react to what these 16 games has looked like for the Astros. Chill out, Poncho. You're panicking about us panicking, and we're not even panicking.
Yeah.
What is your ugly for the Astros in this series?
My ugly is Joe's bad. My ugly is just the defense across the board.
Oh.
You and I have been staunch supporters of Jeremy Peña's defense, and he backed it up with what he did in a full body of work last season. This year, not so much. I mean, you see him ranging behind second base, and he can't control the baseball, the throwing errors. I mean, it has been a comedy of errors as it relates to him. We already talked about the fact that Abreu isn't even close to Yuli at first base, and you knew he was more limited than what Yuli gave you at first, but you didn't know it was going to be this bad. Every time you see Jake Meyers in the outfield, you hold your breath, whether he's trying to catch it, throw it, or chase it down, going, what happened to the old Jake Meyers?
He's been all right in the outfield.
Oh, my God. Every time he throws, Jeremy, it looks like
his arm. I'll give
it
you
looks
that.
Like a quarterback that needs like six steps to wind up before he throws the football.
So Bryce Young?
Maybe. But he just looks so different as a shell of himself that you look at it across the board and you say, the defense has not been great, and it's been ugly.
Yeah, I think that Peña, like, his defense, I'm not going to defend his defense because his defense hasn't been great. Some of, like, the plays, though, with his glove, like, that's still there. There's some of those, like, good plays, good to great plays that Peña made last year that he's not making this year. Like, the ball in the hole whenever he dove and it popped out of his glove.
Yep.
Last year he was making that play.
Yes, he is.
A tough backhand. Last year he was making that play. He's not making those plays right now. His arm is the same arm that it was last year. Like, that was the biggest critique that I had about his defense last year, was that his arm is questionable, and now you're seeing it magnified because you have a first baseman that can't scoop as well as Yuli Gurriel, who is one of the very best at scooping in all of Major League Baseball. So the arm is about the same. And what, like, it's not that he doesn't have a strong arm. His arm's plenty strong. To me, it's more whenever he has time and he babies a throw over there that he's one hopping it. It's weird because he has a plenty strong arm. My ugly was the seventh inning yesterday, the seventh inning that just got away from the Astros, and that was an inning in which Jeremy Peña had an error. What was frustrating about that inning is outside of the leadoff guy Lowe hitting a double to lead off the inning, nothing else got hit hard. Like, it was the defense by Peña committing an error, a couple of bleeders through the hole on the left side, and all of a sudden you end in the grand slam by Neris whenever he almost got out of the bases loaded, two out jam, and then hangs a breaking ball on an 0-2 count. Simeon puts it into the Crawford boxes.
0-2 counts would kill me.
Just to the right of the Gentleman bar. Yeah, that ball needed to be in the dirt.
That's exactly
right.
It
had to be in the dirt, and it was left, you know, close to the like middle third. It was a little, it was in the lower third, but it was way too tall. It was way too up for an 0-2 breaking ball. That ball needed to be in the dirt. He left it up and Marcus Semien crushed it. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge inning in which like they hit the ball hard twice. They hit it hard off Fromber once. You had the error there. Just frustrating. That was a very ugly seventh inning in a game in which the Astros, like it was nothing entering that inning, and that game pretty much put it away.
Yeah, no question about it. And they've had a couple of those. The micro we're talking about as bad as it could have been and that it turned out to be last night, it was bad and could have been worse in Hunter Brown's start, but he found a way to pitch you out of it, to keep you in it, to get out of a jam that he didn't create for himself. But he was finding a way. But those big innings, those game changers have been prevalent early in the season. It's unfortunate, but that's baseball.
What is your ugly, Joe George?
Luis Garcia.
Oh, man, I forgot about Luis.
I mean, 7-plus ERA right now. It's pretty much as bad as it can get, and I don't know what it is.
I have a theory, if you're interested.
Is it the Cha-Cha's going?
No, it's not. Like, Cha-Cha worked, like he worked out of the stretch. Like, Luis Garcia had to not use the Cha-Cha last year. He couldn't do it whenever he's working out of the stretch.
Sure.
I do think it's the pitch clock, though. Like, I relate it, and I tweeted this out at Jeremy Brown. Luis Garcia throwing pitches to like when a basketball player has to heave up a shot with the shot clock winding down, where the efficiency and the shot percentage is going to go way down whenever you're taking late in the shot clock shots. Luis Garcia seems to me like he is rushing. It seems to me like he is hurrying to get the ball off before the pitch clock goes off. It's like, it's not so much the cha-cha. It's like the in-between pitches stuff where he's walking around the mound. He's coming up to the plate to pick up a baseball. Like, that's part of like Luis Garcia's game that I really didn't realize until now. All of a sudden, I see him having to hurry where he's kind of unsure. His pitch, his in-between pitch routine, he hasn't figured it out, and I think it's totally affecting him.
Same sport analogy, but different for me, because the one thing that I've found in the over the years is guys relax and know there's no pressure on them when they have to take a shot clock running down shot. To where a lot of times they end up making more because they realize they're not going to get yelled at if they miss it.
Uh-huh.
I relate it to free throw shooting. Like, if you take a guy that has a free shoot, they always say do the same routine at the free throw line. The same amount of dribbles, same pause, whatever. And now all of a sudden the referee gives him the ball and says, 2 seconds, you can't do your pre-shot routine. Now you're completely out of sorts. Now you're like, you're not in that rhythm. You're not getting set. You're not mentally and physically, you know, in the right relaxed position to shoot the shot. And to your point, you're not getting the results that you're used to getting. That's what I see. I don't think it has anything to do with Rock the Baby. I think it has everything to do with the fact that he can't get his wits about him from pitch to pitch.
And not only is it a change from year to year with the pitch clock, he introduced himself to the pitch clock in spring training. Then he stopped using it in the World Baseball Classic, and now it's back. And like you're seeing, his velocity is down. Christian Javier's velocity is down. Ryan Pressly is not pitching as well as he can be because he can't shake off the catcher a million times. Like, you are seeing, at least on the Houston Astros, the three main pitchers who participate in the World Baseball Classic are struggling. Like, they're not playing their best baseball. So, like, it's obviously not affecting everyone, but, like, a lot of these guys who are having great seasons did not participate in the World Baseball Classic.
World Baseball Classic is a factor. Whether you want to admit it or not, and whether you think it's a positive for certain hitters or not, it is a factor both from an injury perspective and to every guy you mentioned, Joe, as it relates to this our hometown team. It's been a factor, and I don't think it's been a positive.
Yeah, it doesn't mean – now, I think you could say from the hitters it has. I mean, look at Kyle Tucker. It hasn't affected Pena, but he didn't play a lot. But like Kyle Tucker was hot in the World Baseball Classic, and he's carried that over into the season. He's had a great start, MVP-level start to the season. Like, if Yordan Alvarez wasn't on his team, people would be praising Tucker even more.
Right.
So, like, it's not that these guys can't figure it out, but the free throw thing really does make a lot of sense. Like, you've got a rhythm. It's been changed dramatically. And now you've got to figure it out. And it's not just the pitchers. It's the catchers. It's the pitching coaches.
See,
like, how do you help these guys with this magnitude of a change in one offseason?
I have two theories or two suggestions for, like, Pressly and Luis Garcia. I had somebody tweet at me and say Luis Garcia should just pitch primarily out of the stretch.
Not a bad idea.
I went and looked at the numbers for Luis Garcia with men on versus his numbers without runners on. Career for Luis Garcia in the big leagues, he has better numbers with men on than he does with nobody on base. So, like, okay, Luis Garcia, like you're having trouble. If it, maybe it is the cha-cha, maybe you're, you know, rushing pitches, maybe it's the free throw. Like, find something that works for you, and you've been better in your entire career out of the stretch, better than out of the windup. Just go to the stretch. Yep. Like, give that a shot. The Christian Javier thing, like, I'm trying to figure out why his velo is down. And it's not so much that his velo is down. It's only like a mile and a half. But his strikeout rate is like cut in half nearly. That to me is a bigger concern.
Yeah, but when you, I think, but his big pitch is the high fastball.
Sure, and that like I wouldn't be as concerned if Christian Javier's velo was down a mile per hour if the strikeout rate was the same. Like, but it's that the fact that they're coupled together where it's like, what's going on here? This is not concerning. It's not alarming. It's just something you're watching closer. The fact that his velo is down and his fastball is down a mile per hour and his strikeout rate's being cut nearly in half, those things paired together is like, okay, we got to get this figured out. Maybe it's a World Baseball Classic thing. I have a theory that because he's like the number two starter of this rotation versus in the past being like a four or five starter, even prior to that was kind of a floater for the Astros, where he kind of like, he emptied the tank quicker in the past. I feel like Javier thinking that all of a sudden he's a top of the rotation pitcher, he's a number two pitcher, that he feels like he needs to eat more innings. Instead of being a 5-6 inning guy, he feels like he needs to be a 6-7 inning guy. I feel like he's trying to pace himself, and that's why we're seeing the drop in fastball velocity. That's why we're seeing the drop in strikeout rate. But being really kind of a two, I know he throws more than two pitches, but he relies on two pitches more than like normal starters rely on their top two pitches. Be a 5-6 inning guy, because you're better as a 5-6 inning guy than a 6-7 inning guy.
I think it's natural. I think it's natural for a guy that is feeling like, you know, this is what a starter does, to just be pressing and expecting a lot of what the unrealistic guys that in the local media have been adamant about, which is that starting pitchers right from the jump need to be pitching 7, 8, 9 innings. And I think that as a pitcher, you can feel that, because you know this is the opportunity you've been waiting for. You know that you're starting to get the love and the recognition for what you always wanted to be in this league. So with it and that added expectation is the pressure of thinking, as a starter, I've got to do my job. My job is quality start plus. That's what I got to do. And early on, it doesn't have to be that serious.
The other thing with Presley, like if he is having these issues, like the pitch clock winding down because he's not used to, you know, he's used to shaking off more than normal or whatever, call your pitches. Like, he needs to be calling his pitches then. If he's shaking off and all of a sudden he's late in the pitch clock and that's leading to him being ineffective, I think he's been more unlucky, though, because, like, he gave up a couple of bleeders than a 3-run homer. His first outing of the year was bad on you know, ESPN. All of the middle outings, he was really good. But if that is indeed, like, something that's going on right now with Ryan Presley, is that he's shaking off too much and he's getting late in the pitch clock and it's leading him to ineffective pitches, or maybe pitches he doesn't want to throw in those situations and those counts. Call your own pitches. You're capable of being the guy running the pitch comm. Shohei Ohtani does it. So if that is a real issue, okay, Ryan, give him the device where he's calling the pitches and he doesn't have to worry about shaking off. He's calling his pitches.
Yeah, no, and I think that in all the baseball that I was watching over the course of the week and the weekend, I saw a lot of pitchers doing it. Before they, you know, normally it was you have to be on the rubber and in staring at the catcher before you could get the sign set. There are a lot of pitchers that once they receive the ball back from the catcher, as they're going to get back to toe the rubber, they're already putting the pitch from the pitch comm on their mitt. They're already telling the catcher exactly what they want. Now, you can do all the head shaking that you want after that, but they're already calling their own game.
Yeah.
And it's helpful for them.
Yeah, let him call his own game. Like, if that is a legit reason why Presley has had some struggles, call your own pitches. 713-780-ESPN. What's your good? What's your bad? What's your ugly? We'll get to some of those. 713-780-3776. Also, I believe, Blankers, that if you're a good team in the American League West, that you think the Astros are gettable. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, I was there Friday as soon as we got back into town, and I can tell you that Apollo Men's Health, not just for men, but for men and women both, they care about their patients, and they make sure that they adjust their schedules so that they can get you in when you need to get in and address what you needed to be taken care of. If you go to ApolloMH.com right now and see all the services that they offer, I'm sure there's going to be a couple that might be able to help you. If that's the case, schedule an appointment, because when you go in, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But the most important thing is they're going to be able to help you in areas where you've been lacking. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, we all experience problems and issues when we get older that we didn't have to deal with when we were in our prime. They can get you back to feeling great and getting results again. And it's really simple. They care about results. They get you where you need to go. And they do it in a way in which you feel like you are being looked after while you are looking after your own health. Check them out today and tell them I sent you by. You can get a free body composition analysis or a free B12 shot on your first official visit like I get every week. And I'll tell you right now, they're going to make a difference in your life. They've made a difference in so many people's lives, including our own Patrick Creighton and myself. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Day one, Donna, her bad. Peña's fielding has been bad. I'm not used to day one Donna giving a bad. She's usually very positive.
Has.
Ray of sunlight.
Yeah, it's been really bad.
I'm not, but are you used to day one Donna ever being negative about anything?
Oh, Donna will call it like she sees it. That's what I appreciate. I mean, right. She's not afraid to go at anybody.
King of Twitch says my bad has been Jake Myers.
Thank you.
He had a couple of walks yesterday, didn't he?
Mm.
Yeah, he walked twice. Got on base twice. Mm. That's what you got to do. You got to get on base from the bottom of the order.
That's not all you got to do.
I think he's been better defensively than what you've been saying. Now, his arm, I agree, is bad. He's got a noodle for a left arm. And he hasn't been able to hit. Like, I'm starting to lose faith of him as a hitter. Because whenever he first came up, he was hitting the ball well. I think the shoulder injury has really done him in. I think it's going to cost him like a good big league career.
To me, it seems like no matter what they did medically, there's another surgery in waiting or something. It just seems like he is so tentatively thinking about every throw that he makes. And I'm not even talking about warning tracks and diving and how that relates to what he's thinking about his shoulders. It just looks like that throwing, it hurts me to watch him. So I don't know what he's feeling, but it seems like there has to be another procedure in his future.
And you can live with a noodle arm in the outfield.
Sure.
Like Juan Pierre never had a strong arm. You can have a weak arm and have a good big league career. But what he's doing at the plate, like that to me is way more of an issue than what his arm like is. Because to me, he looks like he's overpowered every time he's in the box. Is he going to draw a couple of walks here and there? Sure. Is he going to sneak a ball into the outfield between the hole? Whatever. Like, sure. But I feel like his power is completely gone. I feel like he's overmatched there. And I feel like that's where I see the shoulder issues more than anything else. I'm losing faith more and more with Jake Myers' ability to hit big league pitching. And like sending him down to Sugarland, he didn't get to do anything. Look what happened last year when he got sent down to Sugarland. He crushed. He was awesome. But he was fantastic.
You have the perfect analogy, though, in terms of some players are just 4A players. Now, when he came up, the Jake Myers that I saw wasn't a 4A player. He was a guy that looked like the moment wasn't too big and he was going to settle right in.
Looked like the future center fielder.
We blame the injuries, but somewhere along the way, something happened, and I'm not 100% sure it was the injuries, but I think they had something to do with it.
I think it killed his confidence. Yeah. I don't think he's been able to recover.
And confidence is such a valuable and important thing with a major league professional athlete, but when it translates to the batter's box as well, and now you're seeing it just completely overtake him in every aspect of his game pretty much, you can't have that guy be the starting center fielder on a playoff and World Series caliber baseball team. You just can't.
That's why right now it's tough because you have Chaz that's sitting because of this eye thing. So hopefully he can get back into the lineup. Hopefully Drew Gilbert can get fast-tracked. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, I feel like if you're a good team in the American League, the AL West, they you feel like the Astros are gettable. Like, you feel like they're prone to not win the division this year. And look, this isn't my opinion. I think that the Astros I still think the Astros are going to win the American League West. We played a tenth of a season. They have a 7-9 record. They had a 7-9 record last year. I'm not panicking. I'm not going to sit here and say the Astros aren't going to win the division. But if you're in the shoes of one of these other teams, look, if you're the Rangers, you feel like you can win this division. You just took 2 of 3 against the Astros at Minute Maid Park. You're Seattle, and I know Seattle was swept by the Astros last year in the playoffs, 3 very, very competitive games. They feel like they've improved. They feel like the Astros have gotten worse. So if you're in the position of Seattle, they feel like they can get the Houston Astros. The Astros, I believe in the past, outside of the COVID year, they've been looked at by the rest of the division as a team that they really can't catch. Like, you might have had Jerry DePoto running his mouth and saying, oh, yeah, we have as much talent, blah, 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 blah. But they always knew that the Astros were the best team in the American League West. I still think they are the best team in the American League West. But I guarantee you Texas right now, after heading back to Arlington after taking 2 and 3, they feel like they're better than the Astros. Seattle, with the offseason that they had, and looking at the Astros lineup right now, they feel like they're better than the Astros. So good teams in the AL West, I bet you right now are talking today, we have a shot to win the AL West.
And they should be. Because, again, we just got done talking about it from a Jake Myers perspective. Confidence is such an important thing in professional sports. And it can be the difference between making and missing a shot, hitting a single or striking out. You know, doing things because you believe in yourself and you have the confidence to go get it means a ton. And for these teams that realistically in the back of their heads, you look at Seattle a year ago and go, no, I think we could be a really good team. But because we have the guys we have playing, you know, right field and not until you knew what you had in J-Rod, but some of the guys that you had across the diamond where you were going, Kalanick was not even hitting and he was one of the number one prospects. You're like, we're good, but we're not that good. But now because they left the door open, and again, there's injuries, key injuries to three players in particular that can still make a difference for this team. But you, from an Astros perspective, that's what you're banking on. That's what you're holding out hope for, knowing it's going to get better. For their perspective, it's like, they're gettable because of the fact that they're leaving the door open, and this isn't going to be a runaway like it's been in years past where it's secretariat and everybody's, you know, racing for second. You're looking at it going, hey, if we're in first place now or we're tied with them record-wise now, there's no reason to believe why we can't be here every step of the way. Mm-hmm. And they're basically feeding you carrots and saying, run, Forrest, run.
I think the Astros are still going to win the American League West, but the Rangers are leaving town, taking 2 of 3 on the road at Minute Maid Park. And they're saying, we can win the American League West. They have the conflict. That series did more for the Rangers, for the positive of the Rangers, than it did anything about the negative of the Astros. Like, long term, the Astros losing 2 of 3 to the Rangers in mid-April, it's not going to matter. The Astros know that deep down, too. Like, the Astros know if they get through this month 500, they're fine. Mm-hmm. The Rangers, though, like, it does more for the, like, their positive, like, mindset of the Rangers than anything else. Because they just went into the house of the defending champions. They're looking up at the gold pennant that's hanging up in left center field, defending World Series champions, the king of the American League West for, you know, the last 7 years outside of the COVID season. And the Rangers are leaving town with 2 of 3 saying, we can play with those guys.
Yep.
We can hang with those guys. So they're feeling like they can win the American League West this year. And Seattle has a better roster than the Rangers do. Seattle feels they can win the American League West this year.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing, too. I mean, when you look at it, and I was thinking about this, too, because I'm with you, and it goes to Dusty's quote, too. First, you just kind of get your feet wet. You start getting comfortable playing baseball again. Then you start at a certain point trying to win series and get back to 500. And when you think about it realistically, the difference between playing 500 baseball is 81, and you're trying to win 100 games. So you get on one or two hot streaks where you run off 8 or 10 in a row or 10 out of 12, you're right where you need to be. So it's too early to panic, but at the same time, if you're every other team in the division, it's not too early to get extra confidence going, we're going to be in this thing. We got a shot to win this thing this year, and we're going to be a playoff team, and we can be as good as the Astros.
Plus, they're looking for reasons, too. Like, if you're the Rangers and you haven't been a playoff team for a while, you're looking for little series wins like this to kind of, okay.
See, like the Mariners in-season World Series a couple times last year.
Didn't work out well for
them. No, but if you don't get the billboard material from another team providing it for you, you need the internal motivation sometimes. And this is where managers and coaches come up to them and go, boys, you just laid 2 out of 3 on the Astros. That means you just laid it on the World Series champs. You can play with anybody. And they're going to build on this, as they should.
If I remember correctly, though, like before that, you know, in-season World Series straight out of the All-Star break, I remember the reason that got built up so much by Mariner fans, because they went on a torrid run where they were winning
a lot. They won like 10 in a row, I think, going into that series.
And the Astros, that's right. They had a big winning streak. And yep. Then the Astros had kind of like limped into the All-Star break a little bit. Jordan didn't want to play right there before the All-Star break. And I want to say that Seattle took 2 of 3 against the Astros at Minute Maid prior to the All-Star break. Maybe. So it's like it gave Seattle that hope of like, oh, they're coming into our place. This is our World Series. We got to get a reputation,
it's our chance
dog.
To make a statement and put the hammer down.
And then the Astros crushed
them. I think the other thing, too, though, is that they might feel this
swept by the A's.
This might feel this way. They, like, all these teams, I get it why they would feel that way, but like, we've heard this before.
Have we with the Rangers, though?
No, but with other teams.
Rangers have just spent every penny they could possibly spend.
But we've had teams in the last, you know, year.
Is that a bad thing?
that have said like that they are close to the Astros.
Well,
and
I
they've been wrong.
Not necessarily in division, though. Not necessarily in division. Joe disappeared.
So don't be deceived. We're very close to Houston.
That was DePoto.
The way we played.
That was DePoto last year.
That was Joe Madden.
Oh, that's right.
He said it. That's April 10th last year.
I think that's
don't
when they
be
lost.
Deceived. We're very close to the Houston Astros.
That's when they lost 2 of 3. Like, they lost 2 of 3, and he said that.
Yeah, they lost, yes.
Yeah, the Angels
lost 2 of 3.
And then Joe Madden was fired weeks later.
Yes.
Which they did him dirty. They did Joe Madden dirty.
No, they did it because Joe wouldn't adjust.
Yeah, he wouldn't give any.
To what?
Analytics.
Joe wouldn't be an analytic guy?
Yeah, no, the GM was trying to call down and tell him who to put in the game.
But Joe's always been he's on the forefront of analytics.
I know, but then he wrote his book, and his book just trashed analytics. That he basically said, like, these GMs have gone too far.
I don't disagree with that.
Like, they're calling him, they're calling the dugout and saying, hey, put this relief pitcher in, it's time.
They have gone too far. That's why I like the Astros hiring Dana Brown, who's like an old school guy, but with a very sound understanding of analytics. I think Dusty Baker got Bruce Bochy hired, to be completely honest with you. I think the Rangers looked at the Houston Astros going like this complete analytical model. They're going to be NASA down there in Houston. And then all of a sudden they hire old school Dusty Baker, win a World Series. I think Dusty Baker got Bruce Bochy the Rangers job, to be quite honest with you.
And who's the Mets manager?
Buck Showalter?
Yeah, him too.
Yeah, because he had a pretty good year.
Like, they kind of all fall into that category of like, but we see this in sports all the time. We see it in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to hire the next Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay. In Major League Baseball, I mean, who is the former Rangers manager? He keeps coming up in interviews.
Not Bannister?
No.
You're talking about the most
Ron
recent
Washington?
Guy?
That one.
Oh, way back then.
But like people, like
Ron third base coach for somebody.
I think Atlanta.
But people have been saying like Ron Washington might get another job. Dusty Baker has started a new trend.
Sure, he has.
Bring the old guys back.
He has started a new trend. And you're like, there's been one massive failure of bringing back an old school guy, yet they're still hiring old school guys. And it was to Joe George's favorite team,
the
Chicago White Sox.
That was a great hire.
Yeah, Tony La Russa. How'd that work out?
They hired La Russa over A.J. Hinch.
Yeah. He was either drunk or napping in the dugout a couple times. Or both.
Yeah, he was definitely napping.
I'll be honest with you. I'm sad that Tony La Russa's out of baseball.
Wasn't it against the Astros that one fan had to tell him to pinch run, and then the pinch runner came out?
No.
I don't think it was against the Astros, but I do remember what
talking
about.
Yeah, it did happen. And they had the audio.
And he did it.
Hey, La Russa, so-and-so should be pinch running right now. The next thing you know, time.
Yeah, let's get that guy in the game. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
I miss him in baseball because he and Dusty hated each other. Like, he and Dusty had such a bitter rivalry, and it was awesome.
I just loved, like, the waddle out to the umpire when he was upset.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
Or the mullet with that thick duck tail in back.
Yeah,
baseball might be better with Tony La Russa.
I think so. I wouldn't want him managing my team, but I want him managing a team in Major League Baseball. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. If the Astros finish April with a 500 record, that's a good thing. It'd be a heck of a feat. After the start that the Astros have had. I'll tell you why next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So the Astros right now are 7-9. Big deal. They were 7-9 last year. Obviously went on to win the World Series. Dusty has talked about early in the year, you try to hover around 500, then you start to chip away, improve to above 500, increase that high water mark, and then all of a sudden, poof, into the year, you've won 95 games, and you lead the American League West. Kugble says if they are still right at 500 after 30 games, I'll start panicking. I actually disagree with that. I believe if the Astros finish April with a 500 record, I'm going to have great positivity about the Houston Astros. Because, look, first month of the year, you're not going to be too many games above 500. You're figuring out your team. Hopefully you get some players back through injury that have been hurt. Michael Brantley, you expect to get him back in May. Altuve in June. Lance McCullers, parts unknown. No idea. But the Astros, with the schedule that they have coming up, what was your original guess with McCullers? Because you heard the latest. I'm not sure if you have, because you're out of town.
I was out of town. I said June 15th.
Did you hear you're out, probably. Well, I wouldn't completely rule you out, but probably a long shot. Dana Brown said that Lance McCullers is going to come back right around or after Jose Altuve.
So is Altuve still June 1st?
Roughly. Yeah. So we're looking
I said my birthday, right around that Mets series.
I would imagine, though, I mean, mid-June is probably the earliest that Lance McCullers will come back. That's my guess now based on new information.
I thought you were going to say All-Star break. Then I was going to be like, oh, God.
Wouldn't shock me. Like, it's one thing to be healthy, but then to, like, completely ramp him up to where he's ready to pitch in big league pitching. Like, he's still throwing on flat ground.
Yeah, that's not good at all. That I mean, and again, this is the why we had the concerns we had from the minute that it was announced that he wasn't going to be ready for the start of the season again because of the fact we've been there, done that. And last year it went from he's not going to pitch anymore in the playoffs or he's going to be out of series and then he's out the World Series and he's out the playoffs. Then he was out three quarters of the year. So it was a joke that might be a reality when we say August 15th.
He's a little soft. He can't pitch through a little bit of boo-boos. He can't pitch through a little bit of a strain. He can't pitch through whenever his hair doesn't look good. Like he's a little soft.
He took his kid to Disney on Ice though at NRG.
Did he?
I was wondering if it was during when the Astros had a game or not, but he did take a picture of him walking his daughter in the parking lot to NRG for Disney on Ice.
Did they have a game?
I think it was the Saturday night game, but I'm not sure.
Would that be a big deal if they did?
I don't know.
I wouldn't care.
I had this discussion going with some of the guys in the gym today where they feel like one of the instructor ladies, their nephew, pitches for the Rays. And she's like, he's paid, so he tells me whether he's hurt or not. He's going to every game, home and road, doing everything. She's like, that's the way it should be. I was like, yeah, but in today's athlete, like, look at Verlander. He wasn't with the team at all while he was rehabbing.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's different. Every situation's different. But I think that it's accepted now that it's up to the player where they feel comfortable, whether if they want to rehab on their own or if they want to rehab at, you know, with their team every day.
I think people would I'm not going to say that there wouldn't be people that would be upset by this. I personally don't care. I don't think
if it hindered their rehab and slowed them down, Brady Patriots thing.
Yeah.
Then it's one thing. But as long as they're still on the same schedule, it's not a big deal.
I don't think it matters also for Lance. Like, I think there's a difference between Lance McCullers and Justin Verlander in terms of how the clubhouse feels about them. You know, because remember, you know, I think it was John, because I wasn't here at the time, but
it was John.
John reported that JV was going to throw out a pitch during the,
the World Series versus the
Braves, and the players said no. Like, Lance McCullers would never get that treatment, ever.
But Lance McCullers also wouldn't have been away from the team the entire time.
Yeah, and so like Lance is still around. Like
I think I saw him in the dugout over the weekend.
Yeah, I think so too. Like I think
I saw that ponytail.
Like I don't think he's rehabbing in Florida like Brantley did, and then like Brantley is, and like what JV did.
No, Brantley's back. He was taking BP.
Yeah, so I don't think even if Lance went to Florida for 2 months, it doesn't matter. I just don't.
But
think
I was going to say it matters in the clubhouse.
It does, but I just don't think I don't think it matters for Lance.
Organizations accept whatever where the player feels most comfortable in rehabbing. Teammates aren't exactly the same forgiving souls. They want you to be you're either with us or against us. And if you're rehabbing in Florida while you're playing your entire season in Houston, and then the playoffs come around and you want to get in while it's good, go away.
Yeah.
I get that.
That was a weird year, though, because that was like they were still testing. They were doing all
that
stuff.
COVID year. There was speculation that like maybe Justin couldn't be with the team.
Yeah, you had to like do some sort of testing to be even on the field.
With Lance, like it's not gonna. His teammates don't care. But first of all, he's here.
It's like the difference, though. You know what? You're supposed to be. If you're not in Cincinnati, where they're so cheap that you worry about getting the best attention to your injury, the belief should always be your team is going to give you better and more substantial medical treatment, care, and rehab than anything you could do on your own. That's another reason why you should be with your team, because now the team has to try and get updates to figure out where you are in your rehab and how things are going, as opposed to being able to monitor you daily. And I think that matters, and it should to a lot of teams.
A lot of players don't do that, though. Like, I heard Carlos Correa didn't step foot in the Astros training room for, like, the last 2 years that he was here.
Yeah, that's because he was hiding something.
They didn't want any data. They didn't want any intel. They didn't want to give the Astros any information about...
You say they, his camp, you mean?
Yeah, okay. Scott Boras and Carlos, they didn't want the Astros to know how bad his back was or his ankle.
They didn't want to give him information.
Because they didn't want the Astros to have it. They didn't want the Astros. Yep. So they hit everything.
Yeah. So that's not that uncommon either. Like Brady had his own people too. So, but it usually is a certain level of player to get to that point.
But
like
at a certain
talking
point,
about
too,
stars.
You're going to get a conflict. Because at a certain point, like it happened with Brady and the Patriots, it's one thing if he's getting outside help and it's helping him to recover quicker. It's another thing if there's a disagreement in terms of the process of the rehab and what needs to be done, and then there's a clash. Because now the team should win out. They're the one putting all the money on the line to pay the player, but the player is going to side with the guy that's his guy, and that's where problems happen.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So I disagree with Coug Blaze saying if the Astros are right at 500 after 30 games, I'll start panicking. If the Astros are 500 at the end of the month, we should be celebrating.
No,
we should be applauding the Houston Astros. The following series that the Astros are playing, they open up a three-game series, Space City Monday, wearing the softball unis, against Toronto. And Toronto's off to a good start. They're 10-6, but they also just took 2 of 3 against Tampa Bay.
A good team.
And Tampa entered that series 14-0 before dropping 2 of 3 against Toronto. So you take 2 of 3 against Toronto, incredible. After the Toronto series, they have Thursday off, and then they head to Atlanta, arguably the best team in the National League. And Atlanta, off to a hot start. They're 12-4, first place in the NL East, so a series win there would be very nice to have. You know where they go from Atlanta? That Tampa Bay team we were just telling you about that started 14-0 and is 14-2 currently. After Tampa Bay, they have a three-game series against Philadelphia. Philadelphia hasn't been great. But if you get through that gauntlet and then all of a sudden you've made up the two games that you're under 500, if you leave the month of April with a 500 record, all is well in Astros land. We should be totally fine with where the Astros are at after a month of the season. If they can get back to 500 before the calendar turns to May, the Astros will be playing some pretty good baseball.
Look, that's the biggest thing to me, is who they're playing right now is maybe going to be the best thing for them, because it's going to give them a different mindset, and it's going to get them to what they've always been able to do, which is step up for the bigger moments. Play against, we always know that they always play the best teams in baseball really, really well. And maybe this is exactly what they need. Just like when we were hearing Alex Bregman, who's not afraid to admit, they're not playing great baseball, and they know they need to clean some things up. What better way to do it than knowing you're going to play a stretch of games against really good teams? Everybody's going to be watching you to see if this is going to be a continuing trend on the downward side, or if you're going to be able to right the ship. If you can come in and set the tone from now through the end of the month against three really good teams, all is forgiven and everybody's going to relax.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. The Houston Rockets, they're ongoing a coaching search right now. I'll be honest with you, I love everything that Rafael Stone is doing in regards to the coaching search for the Houston Rockets. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Turn down for what?
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'll be honest with you, Blankers. Blankers, Branham, Joe George, the band is back together. Killer Bees are one again. I feel whole. I missed you guys. I missed you last week, Blankers. I missed you for 45 minutes today, Joe George. I'm so happy we're back together. I could just feel y'all's enthusiasm. Joe's over there, like, laughing, giggling about it, and Blankers is staring at his phone.
That's why I'm laughing.
Giving you a moment of showing you my feelings. Of being
based
intimate.
On what I heard Friday in the car, I don't believe a word.
Like, I'm not even sure Joel's listening at all.
I know.
That's what you're just saying.
I'm giving you my
Look,
heart.
I'm back. I'm in rare form.
I'm giving you my heart, and I just get the cold shoulder and giggles over there.
Yeah.
Last time I do that, this is why I don't show affection. With
the
you guys.
Only
this
time
is exactly
you've
why.
Ever shown emotion since we've done this show. It's,
that's the last time.
Was when?
Last time. When
was
Case Keenum signed
that's
with the
exactly
Texans.
That's exactly right.
It was
Case Keenum.
It was a great
and it's
day.
The last time that it ever happens. Because this is what happens. I show my affection to you guys. How much I love Joe George. How much I love you Blankers. That I missed you dearly.
You got callers all of that last call week. In and say, Jeremy, when you were out, Joel was... God, he was complimenting you like crazy. Yeah. And you know what you do? You go, so anyway, Nick Caserio and the Texans. I'm like, okay, great. All right. But you get emotional on that. I heard what you said. I don't believe it because I heard you on Friday.
Say what?
You were just very bitter and anti-me.
That's only because I was struggling in who said it.
Yeah.
That was why.
It wasn't
really. You wore the wrath
he's
of my who said
yeah,
it.
I don't know why I got it. It was your performance and the stumpers in there laughing. And he's got nothing to brag about either.
He was deflecting his anger.
I was.
Yeah, I felt
it. It was deflection. This is Killer Bee Psychology 101.
I think it was
going
like,
on right now.
He was upset that he was going over and then you were texting him with the correct answers.
I was mad. Yeah. I wasn't happy. I was not pleased. It ruined my 15 minutes there.
So but that, it didn't ruin your weekend. I got that one. Yeah, I understood that.
I forget about it the moment we go to commercial. Yeah. That's totally the truth. I don't know how you feel about this one, Blankers. Mm. Certainly you don't have any sort of feelings about me. But I love what Rafael Stone's doing. I'll be completely honest with you. I think Stone's gotten some grief over the years. I like the position he has put the Rockets in to have success in the future. A lot of young players, a young core that could be that playoff core. Maybe you get lucky in the lottery. But what's relevant right now is the coaching search and hiring the right guy. And we've had many discussions about the Houston Rockets and the next head coach. And you need a voice in the room. You need a grown-up in the room, quite frankly, with the Rockets. I love everything that they're doing in terms of the names that they've brought in. Every single name is a name that I would be either comfortable with, a name that I like, a name that I know. Like Frank Vogel the other day is whenever I tweeted about it. I love that Frank Vogel is one of the dudes that's being interviewed. He's my fourth favorite guy that is possible to be the head coach of the Rockets, but they're interviewing him. This is good. And some of the names that I don't know, everybody talks about how well they're respected around the NBA. The Rockets are doing right with this coaching search that's going on.
So I'll give you the coaching search part of it, because I don't think that any stone should be left unturned except for the one that's making the decisions, and that one should be turned over, skipped into the lake, and left to go to the bottom. But I think that to this point, to say that I like everything that Rafael Stone, I can't even come close to that, because everything that he's done has been all nothing but what you said about luck. Maybe you get the luck of a lottery ball, because you've already got lucked out in the fact that you basically didn't get any pressure like Nick Caserio is going to get with draft picks, because you were left to take whatever was left over in two drafts when the guy that you conceivably, if you believe what you've heard, wanted was already taken, or the guys. So I don't like a lot of what he's done. I like the fact that the Athletic article finally came out and told the truth about a lot of what I've been talking about and telling you guys for 2 years. And I think that this is the key time now for this organization. So do I like the names? Even James Borrego was added today. Another quality coach that under the Popovich tree knows how to coach young talent. So I'm with you on all the names they've brought in so far. There's not anyone that you would question and say, I don't think that guy is the right guy that will be able to take control of this locker room. But I think overall, it's like we talk about with Caserio, there's so many different responsibilities with this job. And there's so many different areas that Rafael Stone has fallen so far short on, that you can't just say that it's just about the coaching search. But here's where I was going to tweet in terms of what they, it is so important. Two different things. The lottery is going to be the lottery. The lottery balls are going to fall where they fall. You're going to get who you get, or get the pick that you get. You can have all the greatest names on the list in the world. If they don't want to come here, we just got to talking about this with D'Amico. You can pick the right guy, but if he doesn't pick you, he's got to be okay with Rafael Stone. He's got to be okay with the locker room. He's got to be okay with the organization. And if he's not, you can beg and plead and choose the best, biggest names out there. But if they don't want you to, you can't get married and you can't get that guy. So you have to watch the coaching search and you have to watch free agency. Because on the same guidelines, but as it relates to free agency, you can want veteran A and veteran B that are going to fortify your locker room, or even a Jaylen Brown type veteran that could make your, or a Harden even, that's going to make your whole team better, at least on paper. But if they don't want to play here and they don't believe in the entire setup, then they ain't coming.
I'm not giving the flowers to Stone and the Rockets yet, because I do agree that the final part of the coaching search, whenever you figure out who the head coach is going to be, is what swings if it was a successful coaching search or not. There's four or five names that I would be happy with as the head coach of the Houston Rockets. Most of those names have been interviewing with the Houston Rockets. You're right that one of those names has to say yes. But if one of those names says yes, don't you at that point have to give the Rockets flowers for their handling of the coaching search?
Sure.
If Adoka's the head coach, if Fogel's the head coach, if Nick Nurse is the head coach, don't you have to give them flowers?
Yeah, you have to get. They got it right, for sure. I'll absolutely do that. And you know, I've been fair with that too. I said that when he got an undrafted Jayshon Tate, that was a great move. That was a savvy move that turned out great for them. Mm-hmm. Then he screwed it up by extending him before he had to. But when he traded the on draft night to get Şengün, that was a great move.
Yeah.
But then you screwed up the last two picks in the first round. So I give him his flowers when he deserves them. And if you get one of those coaches to sign on the dotted line, and especially if it's the kind of coach that they need, it's a resume that's coming in that says, I am not taking any crap from anyone and I'm going to do it the right way. then it's a complete win for this franchise. And again, in directly to Rafael Stone.
The story that came out in The Athletic, which confirms what you've been telling us forever, not that any of us doubted you, Joe or I.
Twitch.
Maybe some of the Twitchers, maybe some of the hivers, yep. You know, wondering, you know, how you know things, which is silly, because you do. You're well connected. The part that I actually found to be a positive, like, it sounds surprising that, you know, Rafael Stone was interrupting practices, doing all the stuff, confirming everything that you said. We believed you. The part that I found encouraging, though, the fact that, and what I found positive, was that it didn't happen last year. This happened in 2021, 2022, and whenever he was told to stop, Rafael Stone, he stopped. I found that to be a good thing.
If that's true. Because I've also heard, to the contrary, that he still would occasionally do it. He kind of focused more on if a coach was working with a player one-on-one, he'd interrupt that. Or he would be able to, he would say to the coaching staff, you're no longer allowed to pick on or call out or single out player A, player B. They don't like it. When that's part of being a professional athlete and being coached. So maybe he stopped some of the, maybe the practices or the shoot-arounds, but all the behavior didn't stop. It's like him trying to defend culture and trying to say he'll fight, which I completely disagree with his abilities to do any of that. However he meant to fight, maybe argue. But he could argue till he's blue in the face that they got a great culture. But if you go from veterans that have been there and done that to veterans that are still on the team to other people around the league to the beat writers and the newsbreakers like Woj and Windhorst and all those guys, they aren't wrong. They're hearing it directly from the people that have experienced it. The culture in the organization has been a bleep show.
Yeah. You don't need Stone to go away, though, to fix the culture, I don't
know. No, you need the right coach.
Udoka could fix the culture. Nick Nurse could fix the culture. Frank Vogel could fix the culture.
You know, forever and a day, I've been making the parallel comparison between Texans and Rockets been doing the rebuilds. As it relates to this with the Texans, this is the equivalent, and you don't have to like that they hired Lovie or how they hired Lovie, mm-hmm. but you hired an experienced head coach that came in and immediately commanded the room to say, you're no longer going to be at my practices to interrupt. You're no longer going to be on the headsets during games with audio and the ability or on my practice field. You need a coach that carries the clout to be able to say, hey, fine and dandy, you used to do this. You hire me, we're doing that.
Yeah.
And that's how we're going to, that's our daily regimen.
It's a really good comparison. The one thing I would nitpick with that, though, is that Caserio, they said all the right things and Lovie did that to Caserio. But Caserio didn't really give Lovie that true power, though.
But this is where you're right.
And that can't happen here.
Exactly. But this is why the resume means so much, because now you're not talking about a Lovie Smith, hey, found it all in a bottle 1 year and took the Bears to the Super Bowl, but otherwise we already talked about his less than stellar record. You're talking about, if you talk about Udoka, you're talking about a guy that took a young team to the title. Uh-huh. They didn't win it, but they got there. You're talking about Nick Nurse, who took a Raptors team, brought them together and got a title, and came from your organization to get his start. You're talking about a Kenny Atkinson, who used to work here, who took a Nets team that wasn't supposed to be very good, all young players, got him to the playoffs, got punished for it because KD and Kyrie didn't want to play for him. But guess what? Now he spent the last couple years on the Warriors bench next to Steve Kerr and got a title. Every one of these guys, Vogel's got a title. They're going to come in with enough skins on the wall to say, I'm not doing this, and Stone's going to have to listen, unlike Caserio that's going, yeah, I get those things, but at a certain point, I'm still going to do what I need to do because I'm the boss.
But what has to happen after they do that is that Stone needs to empower that head coach.
No,
Caserio
question.
Didn't really empower Lovie Smith. Nick Caserio went out and drafted Derek Stingley Jr. when Lovie Smith says that cornerbacks are the fifth most important position for his defense.
I think the big difference, though, is that like Silas is Cully and Lovie.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, it's like he's like both those hires in one, and this new coach is D'Amico. Like, it's... They're not going to hire, I don't even know like what the equivalent to Lovie Smith, Phil Jackson.
You got to have a guy that hasn't
won it. I'm just trying to think of some old guy, like, I don't know, Mike D'Antoni for a year.
Yeah.
Like I don't think there's really an equivalent.
Or what if just John Lucas? What if they fired Silas and just gave the interim label for Lucas for the last 6 weeks of the season?
Yeah,
it would have been like that.
Yeah, maybe John Lucas would be like the next guy to get to your D'Amico. I think Silas is just like the combination of what Cully and Lovie Smith were for the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever they hire next is going to be the guy that has to change it. But it's not easy to change. Because the Rockets' problems to me aren't Rockets' problems. They're just NBA problems. Like, I think dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, I just don't think the NBA is prepared to coach these guys.
Joe, and here's the other comparison I've made. Rockets and OKC. Similar paths, similar draft picks, similar young players.
But there's
one team's figured it out, found continuity, found coaching staff that could coach players. Players were coachable. Results are evident.
But there's
Rockets don't have any of that.
But the big difference is that, like, I think we discredit OKC too much. It was only in 2020 that they took the Rockets to, what, seven games? With Lou Dort and some of these young guys already on that roster. Like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was already there. Their rebuild, their timeline is totally different. Like, they've never had that superstar player.
But yet their best pick this last year didn't step foot on the court, and they were who they were.
For sure.
You had Jalen, I mean, you had Jabari, and this is who you were.
100%, but, like, I think the real big difference to me is, like, the Rockets don't have anything close to SGA. Like, they have their leader, their veteran. Like, I mean, to me, SGA is probably one of the most underrated players in the NBA.
No question.
Like, the Rockets don't have that guy, and they acquired him via trade. And, like, that's, to me, is, like, they have the coach, but they also have the superstar.
Yeah, it's a good point, but at the same time, when you look at the makeup and how they were constructed, OKC did everything the Rockets did. They just did it better. They got guys that also they were focused on not just analytics or what potential they had. They were trying to build a culture within their locker room to where guys could be cohesive.
I don't think it's done though, right?
Like, it's not done,
right? Like, the Rockets can catch up and surpass them.
It's,
like,
not done.
Is the OKC nucleus better than the Rockets nucleus?
I think the answer is no, and I also don't think you can act like they can. Maybe. They would have done.
OKC's a better roster.
I think it's close.
I think you factor in Giddey.
But at the end of this offseason, is it going to be better?
The two Jalen Williamses.
Yeah.
And Giddey.
Yep.
And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And then you still have Chet, who's never even played for you yet. I think OKC's roster could be better.
It is, but OKC, like, you can never convince me that they would not have taken Jalen Green if they were in position to take him. Sometimes it's just how the lottery falls. Josh Giddey might just be the better player. But, like, it's just – but the Rockets were – Giddey was behind them. So it's apples and oranges in a way. Like, you can't – like, the Rockets part of, like, where they're struggling with is the lottery balls just haven't fallen their way.
Mm-hmm. Well, they haven't. That's what I'm saying. So they've been – I guess here's the other thing. I don't want to say forced, Jeremy. And we can talk about this on the flip side. But they weren't forced to – they could have done – again, Texans parallel. They weren't forced to sit there and take what was left. They could have traded down too.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind who they've gotten, though. I have no problem with who they've drafted. I have no problem with Green or Jabari.
Okay.
At all. Do you?
Green's a guy that I feel like they were forced to take, where there were you could have had other options. If you believed all the clippings, he was the guy you had to take. But you know what? Between Evan Mobley and other guys down the road, if you weren't sold that he was going to be the next superstar, you could have had options.
Mm-hmm. 713-780-ESPN. We do it every Monday at 2, our Mailbag Monday. You can ask us whatever you want. Want to ask us a Rockets question? You can. Want to ask us about Joe George and what he likes to do in his free time? You can. You can ask us anything. 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.